Okay, welcome to another Right Shoot Cut podcast. I'm here at the Edinburgh International Film Festival with two Edinburgh filmmakers who have a film playing this weekend. I've got with me Tom Chick and Rory Alexander Stewart. Guys, thanks very much for doing this podcast with me.
Oh, thanks,
no problem.
You guys have, Tom, you've screened at Right Shoot Cup before.
Yep.
So you know that it's about celebrating film and especially independent film here in Scotland and beyond. Can we start off with you guys just telling us a little bit about who you are? So you're a filmmaker, but where did that all start?
So it's kind of, so I'm from Morningside.
You're Tom.
And I'm Tom.
I'm Rory.
Yeah.
And I'm from, well, I mean, Leith, fundamentally. Fundamentally, yeah. Leith.
So how did this Leith and Morningside combination come together?
So there was a filmmaking charity, and which still is running, called Scottish Kids Are Making Movies, which was based out of the film house. And we both joined that. I think Rory joined kind of maybe a year or so after me, when we were kind of about 14, I think.
Yeah.
And that's interesting because obviously I work at Screen Education where we work with young people. So what at 14 were you already making stuff at that age? Unless you knew it, then you found out about this. Or?
I think we were like both pretty pretentious, sort of wanted to make quite serious films when we were 14. Although we didn't, we made quite silly things, but.
Yeah, I mean, like I'd made stuff at like activity week at school, and I was very interested in cinema and kind of maybe kind of more sort of world cinema stuff from when I was younger. I was already making. I'd done stuff at school, but I hadn't really kind of taken it as that seriously up until kind of when we started at this charity.
Cool.
Yeah,
yourself,
I was pretty similar. Like, I didn't really know about like world cinema until I sort of started hanging about with Tom, I think. So, but I was definitely interested in films, and you know, and then it all just blossomed into making a western.
Yeah, and there was this woman Shona who founded it. This charity was founded by Mark Cousins and Shona Wood. In, I don't know how long ago, but over 10 years ago.
I think it's about 20 years
ago. Yeah. And Shona kind of was really amazing and quite sort of anarchic and very pushing kind of us having control and, you know, just kind of like letting us do what we want. And if we had, you know, kind of, if we wanted to talk seriously about cinema, she was kind of pushing that. And
she was quite, like, she would, you know, definitely criticize us more like we were. Maybe a bit older than we were, you know. I think she was quite honest and quite, you know.
So challenging you in a sense, encouraging you to do your best.
Like, she wasn't patronising, basically. Yeah. You know, she spoke to us like we were adults and all that.
Yeah, she treated us with a level of respect and kind of.
Respect?
Yeah, no, she treated us with a level of respect of, like, regardless of our age and spoke to us as equals, which was as important as anything else. And certainly, like, I didn't, and just having an adult talk to you in those terms and it's so important. And like, I, you know, I didn't get that at school. I didn't get you know, from like basically from only one person in, you know, in like my whole kind of childhood.
I think like in sort of filmmaking as well, you have to get used to people criticizing you, and I think we got used to that quite quickly, you know. I mean, like, when we moved to university, you know, I think there was a lot of people that get a bit freaked out by their first critique, but it was quite, it wasn't that bad for us, I don't think.
No, that's really interesting. And that, so you went from that to university, and did you find at university that you were in a bit of a better playing field than the others that were there because of the education you'd had through SCAM?
I don't know. I mean, I think we were maybe a little bit more, for what we wanted to do, for the sort of films we wanted to make, I think we were maybe a little bit more well equipped, but I don't know. I mean, you know.
Well, I think
it's. I don't want to say we were like, you know, above anyone
course,
else at all, because I don't think we were. But
it's not more above. I'm thinking. Do you think you had a better foundation then?
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I started on the, I was kind of a bit torn between, because I was, well, yeah, I kind of used to be much more kind of equally into kind of art and kind of painting as film.
Yeah.
And then, so I was quite sort of, you know, I wasn't actually even quite sure that I'd wanted to do film kind of when it came to go to university, because I wanted to kind of do art film, I guess. But when we started on the, I started on the foundation course kind of doing a bit of both, and, but certainly just from having this course, like, you know, my showreel was, because I actually had work that I would put on my showreel from my foundation course from when I was 16.
Yeah.
And, you know, other people didn't have that. So it was just like that, I think it was more just that I'd made more work that I was kind of happy with. And then obviously you kind of, yeah, and then you do build on that. So I think it was really important.
It's interesting to me because when I went to college, I went to college fresh in a sense of no film background in any way, just someone who watched the movies and liked them kind of thing. So I went to college and I started making that work at college and university, which you guys probably would have already have made quite a few shorts by that time, or at least
I think we
played about
two or three each, you know. But I think, because I mean, the other thing was just that, like, we were encouraged to like watch a lot as well, and because Scam is and was based in the film house, it sort of, you know, maybe you'd be a bit more daunted by going into the film house if you're quite a young person, because it is mostly sort of older people, and you know, you kind of know the place better, so you're more comfortable going in seeing strange films.
It was so cheap as
it
well.
It was cheap as well. Yeah,
and
Thursdays
I think
were like £2 or something. Like
no, yeah, Mondays was £1.20 matinees. It was, and then then it was like £1.50, and it was, and also Shona would give us comp tickets.
Yeah, yeah. And we'd get delegates passes for the festival as well. Yeah,
and then the cameo used to be dirt cheap, and like on when I was in sixth year, I got Wednesdays off, so I'd go to the Wednesday matinees, which were £1. So like you'd spend like a fiver and go see five films.
Yeah, yeah, fantastic.
And it's just, which is, and like there's, and that's, I saw loads of films in the cinema, and I think like that's, I don't really know what to do about it, but that has really changed, and it's really sad that this, you know, if I were a teenager today, I just wouldn't be able to afford
you'd
to go to the cinema.
You watch it online as well, you know what I mean?
But I don't know if I'd concentrate.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know if I'd sit, if I'd take those the same chances and kind of what I chose to watch. As if it was just kind of accessed online.
I mean, it's something that we're very aware of and looking to do something about, the sense that youngsters should be going to the cinema, you know, and they should be accessible to them. Whether that's free tickets if you're on a certain scheme or whatever else, you know, I think it's vital.
I mean,
it's really important.
The other thing as well is that I think it's quite important to watch films that at first are maybe quite difficult. I mean, I think it's like reading, like, the more, you know, the bigger your vocabulary, the more books that you can kind of understand and read and sort of take in, and more ideas that you can take in. And I think there is a sort of, there is a barrier. If you're only used to watching things that are kind of easy watches, you miss out on this whole massive section of cinema that just has, it's full of ideas, you know.
Exactly. So you guys went to uni in Bournemouth.
Yeah, so
right?
Yeah, so
yes.
I'm ahead, a year ahead of Rory.
Yeah.
So I went, yeah, so I went kind of a year ahead.
Cool.
A year apart.
Yeah, a year apart.
And was there a reason for Bournemouth, or just to get away from Edinburgh? Or?
They shot on film, I think was a big one.
Not,
for
like,
me anyway.
For me, anyway, I just remember, like, Shona saying, oh, I hear Bournemouth's good.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of, like, what was in Glasgow, the Royal Conservatoire.
Yes,
yeah.
It's interesting. I went to Falmouth because my college lecturer went to Falmouth's good.
And it's just definitely, like, if you're doing, like, film stuff, it's like, I mean, where do I go? It's definitely when I was that age, I was completely clueless.
Yeah.
And you don't, and even if you go to the open days, like, everything looks great wherever you go. It's like, you know, because they say, oh, we're making films. And you're like, oh, that's great.
Mm.
You know, that's what I want to do. And I think also that I knew that it was mostly practical.
Yeah.
At least Bournemouth was like 75% practical course.
Which is important.
Yeah. So, because I wasn't, you know, I wanted to make films. And also, and I think also I wanted to do, yeah, and also it was an art school, and that kind of was important to me because I was kind of in this slight sort of grey area at that time. So that was, but it was mainly just Shona said that it was good.
I think that's the same for most people. What did you get out of the university experience? either of you?
Well, it's a funny one. It's a funny one. I think, I mean, I've just written and directed something on the Scottish Short Scheme, and that's the first thing I've really done kind of proper since graduating. And I think it really depends on the course and the tutors and stuff, but like, I do feel like you're sort of put in a headspace sometimes on film school things where it's like, you don't feel that you can kind of do anything you want. And that's like a bit of a drawback, I suppose. But at the same time, like, you know, well, got to shoot on film, got to kind of shoot in a, you know, semi-professional sort of slightly difficult way. And, you know, if you knew you were going to get to make a film every year as well, that's kind of, I think that's quite good, because if you're doing it yourself, well, I mean, just like the documentary we did took like a year because we didn't have anyone who was sort of cracking the whip, you know. Yeah. So I think it can be really good for, I mean, the other thing is you meet filmmakers, you know, and you can actually develop a working relationship with other, you know, practitioners or whatever, cinematographers and editors and stuff. And then now, you know, I think, you know, like, you can get jobs through people, you know, and exactly. You've got a whole network once you sort of graduate. So that's definitely a benefit, because otherwise you kind of have to go out and graft and come to film festivals and sort of meet people that way.
Yeah, yeah, of course. And your graduation films, what did you make, Tom?
Well, it's slightly, because when I was on my foundation course, I made a film. Basically, nothing I made on my degree I show to people or would want to show, because I think definitely in terms of what people seem to like about my work is it has a kind of distinctness to it, and a lot of the stuff that I did in uni was kind of me kind of a bit like not quite
learning, finding
and also quite uncomfortable with them. They were trying to steer me kind of into work that I didn't really want to do.
Well, this is sort of the thing, is that if you're trying to make something that's maybe a little bit more personal, it's hard to have a sort of, you know, narrative script critique of it, you know. That can be quite limiting, I think.
But the grad film that I did anyway was, I think there's a clip of it on my Vimeo at least, but it was called Through My Brother's Window, and it was about a guy whose brother mysteriously returns home after he's been away, and then kind of in the night disappears, and then his kind of younger brother follows him through the woods until they kind of reach the sea and his brother's disappeared. But that was kind of the plot in a nutshell, as I kind of initially wrote it. And then they kept on trying to flesh it out, and in the fleshing out, kind of like lost a lot of the good stuff about it.
And Rory yourself?
Well, I mean, I seem to always you know, come after Tom, and then it's a little bit easier for whatever my year of whatever scheme I'm on at that moment is. So my grad wasn't quite as difficult, I think, because I had a tutor who really liked the script and just sort of, I mean, that was the other thing, is there's not a lot of screenwriting kind of stuff at Bournemouth. There's not like a dedicated tutor for that, really. And it was, you know, I think that was a bit difficult. But so I had this tutor who really liked the script, and she was quite protective, and, you know, it turned out all right. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't amazing. I don't know. I think I wish that I'd been a bit more free with it, though. You know, I think that was sort of the thing, was that I got a bit. I used to be a bit more technically minded as well, like more concerned with that sort of side of it. You know, so the performances are like, they're all right, they're passable, but they're not kind of interesting.
Of course. Okay, so if we go on kind of post-uni, you guys making some films, first one that springs to mind, Tom, is yours.
Yeah. When I was about to graduate, I applied for the kind of the first Ideas Tap Film Fund. Kind of round about the time I graduated, I knew that I'd got this money, which was $5,000 to do it was like $5,000 to do a 5-minute short film. And it was the first time they kind of run it, and so it was all kind of a little bit sort of experimental, kind of how they approached it, I think. So yeah, so I kind of graduated knowing that I was going to make another film, which was a huge, that was so important to me, because I kind of was unhappy with how it had gone.
Yes.
I kind of had a kind of like another chance to really kind of do what I wanted to do, and kind of doing that film was kind of like a little bit just trying to just kind of almost make like perverse decisions.
Yeah.
Just to kind of take as many chances as I could.
So what was for someone getting their first pot of money from a kind of from a scheme or an investment, what was that experience like?
Well, it was kind of surreal. I mean, and it was actually because, so Ideas Tap is really hands off. Mm-hmm. Like basically they just sent me checks, and which was great, but I mean, I was 21. So it was good, but I mean, like, I probably could have done with, you know, meeting someone. And
yes,
I did later on meet a kind of mentor who would catch up with me, but it wasn't like, you know, there wasn't kind of any development and things.
So you were producing as well as
yeah,
making,
I kind of did everything on that, which again was kind of something, is, you know, I was told, you know, not don't do, and then, but I basically, yeah, I mean, it was, I sort of produced, directed, edited, wrote, did sound, kind of
cinematography.
Yeah, kind of co-shot it. Yeah. So it was like, and that was, but it was because I kind of realized I had this freedom. It was like, okay, hang on.
Yes.
So that film's based on a folk story that comes from the West Coast, Scotland, about a girl who falls in love with a seal. And kind of when we did it, I was like, I wanted to film it on location. I wanted to use non-actors. I wanted to shoot it on black and white 16mm. I wanted to do hand-drawn effects. I wanted to use a really tiny crew. I didn't want to use any lighting. So it was just like, you know, all these kind of things that, oh, hang on, that would be fun to do, that would be fun to do. And then because they were just sending me, and you know, and there were problems. Like I made stupid mistakes.
Yes, of course.
But yeah, it was just kind of a bit, because they'd just given me like, honestly, like a blank check.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just kind of like, okay, let's just kind of do a long experiment.
And that, I mean, that's kind of almost like the polar opposite of uni as well, because I feel like, you know, I maybe didn't make many mistakes, but the work wasn't as interesting, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that Ideas Tap thing really gave you the opportunity.
Well, that's the thing, because, I mean, the film's got a real distinctive style.
Mm.
And it is something that kind of, when that film landed in my inbox for Right Shoot Cut, I was kind of blown away that there was someone in Scotland making something as interesting as this. So with the kind of no constraints came a lot of freedom, and you say you made mistakes and learned from it, but did you know that was the kind of style you were wanting to move forward with, or was
well
it?
I think it's slightly, because I kind of, not so much now, but I definitely used to watch a lot, lots and lots of films, and I kind of have kind of, you know, I think, and but there were basically, so I have kind of seen a lot of films, and certainly there's a lot of films that in retrospect I kind of realize influence that, but when I was making it was kind of like basically like all quite instinctual.
Yes.
But then I think it's kind of like you've kind of like, you know, rehearsed your instincts.
Yes,
by
of
watching
course,
loads
yeah.
of films.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I mean, yeah, so it was just like, I mean, I was definitely, you know, I knew that I wanted it to kind of be timeless, and I knew if I kind of made it in a wacky way that it was gonna, that things were gonna, you know, make it look a certain way and have a certain style to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, but it was like, I did just feel like I was flying by the seat of my pants for the whole thing.
That's great. that's fantastic. And before we move on further with your stuff, obviously, Rory, you said that you're now making a film that's your first thing since graduation, but you wrote recently a film.
Yeah. Well, I mean, really, I think the kind of important film after university, but halfway through my last year, my girlfriend who has ME, I gave her a tape recorder from a short that I'd made that year, and she recorded basically just kind of started off as like nonsense, just mucking about, and then she started talking about having ME, and it was almost sort of like a diary. And she sent me the tapes for that, and I just thought, oh, this is like really great, I should do something, I should film something to go along with this, and sort of that went on for like maybe a year it took to patch this little film up together. It ended up being an 8-minute short called Kerry's Tapes. But that was kind of similar to to The Fisherman's Daughter, to what Tom was just talking about, in that I edited it, shot it, you know, kind of directed it, did everything myself. Was very like, it was loose because it was a documentary as well. It was really the first documentary I'd ever done, and it was just about like, you know, picking the best moments from a load of good moments that my girlfriend had sort of created herself. Kerry Lees, by the way, I should give her credit because she is credited as co-director. But that was definitely like a big one for me in terms of like, I think when I was at film school, I was a bit more interested. I was always trying to find like what I wanted, maybe something I'd seen in another film or whatever, and trying to sort of like overreach.
Yeah.
Whereas this was much more about choosing the bits that I already liked, you know, and that worked already. So that really had like quite a big impact.
Did you do anything with the film, sorry, before we
moved on? Yeah, I did. I sent it out to a couple of festivals, and it did all right. It got nominated for Best New UK Short at the London Short Film Festival, which was nice, and, you know, some sort of a couple of ME-related people sort of sent me nice emails about it, and, you know, but I do feel that's actually something I'd quite like to revisit one day, maybe do slightly longer when my girlfriend's recovered a little bit more, maybe.
Yeah, of course. But so from that, you've got the port doc that you've been making.
The port documentary is about the Port Leith Bar in Leith, which is sort of semi-infamous. It's mentioned a couple of times in Irvine Welsh books. It's sort of famous for being a bit of a, I don't know what the word is.
Colourful bar?
Colourful, yeah. A fun, colourful bar full of fun, colourful characters. But that's my local. My dad's the manager, and so I started working there after I left film school as well. And that was just another case of like, oh, I really, you know, I love being in this place, and these people are interesting to me. And this, it's been open for maybe 25 years, maybe 27 or something, and it's got this really long history, and everyone's got a story.
Yeah.
And really, that started off as just like, oh, it would be fun to film some of this.
Yeah.
And then it just developed and kept on developing, and then we got some money from Ideas to the Ideas Fund, and that was very loose. It was all sort of borrowing cameras off people,
of course,
like yourself.
And
that's now playing here. That's premiering here at Edinburgh, so that's nice.
That's been a year in the making, getting up the shooting, the editing, all that kind of stuff. And now it's going to play on Sunday?
Yeah, it's playing on Sunday with a longer film called The Making of Us.
How does it feel to have a film? Both of you have had films at festivals before, but how does it feel to have your film playing at Edinburgh or any other festival, say, that you're attending at least? Because there's 100 festivals. Well, there's a million festivals across the world. But here in Edinburgh, you're both from here. How does that feel? You've had a film here before, haven't you?
I've had two films here before.
Yeah.
It was slightly strange because the Fisherman's Daughter played here in 2011, and I was really excited then to get in. But that festival was a bit of a tricky one.
It wasn't the best festival, though.
So it ended up, and it screened in this like university lecture room, and basically it was kind of like a little bit of an anticlimax.
Of course.
So that kind of like, you know, the sort of, because like when I was younger, like it was kind of, you know, it was one of my sort of dreams to show Edinburgh. But then kind of when it came around to it, it was a bit like, oh. But then last year when Deaf and a Nut played, and that was in Cameo One, which is a cinema, like that was really amazing.
Yeah.
And it looked fantastic, and there was quite a few people there, and I really love Cameo One. And
Cameo One's my favourite cinema in Edinburgh.
Despite the smell.
So then, like last year, I was really pleased. And normally, I hate watching. I mean, like my films. But then, just because that was like a really pleasant experience.
Cool. And is this your first time playing?
I think it is. Yeah. I mean, like, because even when we were in Scam, though, like they played all the Scam films in Film House 2, which is where the port is screening. So, it's interesting though. I feel a bit like it's a bit like it playing in my living room, though, you know, because it's also familiar.
Yes.
Like I remember I went to. Yeah, it's funny. I think you kind of, for it. I don't know. I think personally, for it to be exciting, it has to be sort of somewhere a bit crazy, you know, like a film I edited played in India and I got to go with it, and that was, you know, like, I'm sure for most of the people there, it wasn't like a huge place, and they were all probably just like, oh, this is just our local, but for me, it was like, oh, it's like this, it's like the Indian Film Institute or something like that. And, you know, like our grad films playing at the BFI felt quite cool, I think, because our university played everything at the BFI. But I think, I want to go away.
Yeah,
so this is really
nice.
That
makes sense.
This is sort of a different kind of, this is more like a sort of a warm tingle.
Yeah.
Rather than a sort of electrifying
excitement shock.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
It's
And Tom, so Death in the Nut was made as part of the Digicult scheme.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so that was, when was that? It was 2011, kind of after I'd done Fisherman's Daughter. Maybe like 6 months after that, I applied for, it was, yeah, so it's a Creative Scotland kind of has a shorts, a kind of shorts development fund, which is kind of always ongoing, but it's normally run by this production company, Digicult, which is based out of Glasgow. And that year was the Incubator Shorts Fund, and I applied for that with this script, Death in a Nut, which is based on a folk story. And then that was, I think, I can't remember how many, there was like 10 shortlisted and then 2 produced. It was myself and Eva Riley who were produced that year. And then kind of made another short which had a much bigger budget. I mean, that was kind of about 20,000 for that cost. That was a big budget, and I think it was more money than I kind of wanted.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a bigger crew than I wanted. But it was also like it is a film I'm very happy with, and it's also like I definitely know that I can work in that kind of system.
Yes. Yeah.
And have money and have people and communicate my ideas.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know, maybe not as well, you know, maybe I'm unsatisfied or anything like that.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I definitely have that experience and kind of believe that I can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think which is a huge thing.
Exactly, and that's it. That's the experience of it, of course. So Rory, back to yourself, and you had a collaborate script, is that right?
Yeah, I got selected for this scheme run by the photographer Rankin and Dazed and Confused and a production company called The Bureau, who did a really good film called Weekend, which was like a sort of bit of an indie hit, British indie hit. And that was basically, it's, you know, similar to Scottish Short sort of thing. It was development, and then you get given you get given what they give you, which I think in our case was 10 grand and you go out and shoot. But I was just a screenwriter on that. Which was interesting because I'd never, well, as I said before, like Bournemouth didn't have a strong focus on screenwriting really, so I'd never really thought of myself as that, you know, being something I was good at or anything like that. So then they selected me and did sort of 3 or 4 months of development, which was great, and I learned a lot from that. It was quite good in a way, I think, to not have to direct it as well, because we sort of free up your writing a lot when you don't think about how you have to do it, or you know, how you have to sort of shoot things and all that, and you can kind of just, you know, you kind of know you're passing it on to someone else, so there's a bit less responsibility, I suppose, which is always good.
No, that's, sorry if I can pick that up, because that's interesting. I've never actually thought of that or talked about that with anyone before, the fact that if you're writing for someone else, because as filmmakers, we do write and think, how can this be shot? Whereas you, it obviously gave you a bit of freedom.
Well, I mean, like, I think definitely I had, you know, because I'm a director, I did have ideas of how it would look in my head and everything, but I think even just, like, when you don't worry about your shot list, it frees up your writing, because you just don't even think, like, oh, how am I going to get him over to that side when he says that line, because he'd have to be, you know, you don't think about the blocking at all, you just think about the emotion and what what the themes are and what the characters are, and just sort of worry about that, basically, you know. I think scripts should be sort of mostly about how the film will feel rather than how it'll look and sound. I mean, I don't even really think that, I think dialogue should be like kind of quite loose as well, so, you know, and that's why I thought it would be a good idea to write a bunch of monologues for sort of 14-year-olds to read out, but that went alright, I think, in the end it ended up alright, but
So the script, were you did you have any involvement filming wise at all?
Yeah, no, I was really heavily involved. That, I mean, that's the great thing about that scheme Collaborate, is that it's a little bit of a cheesy title. It's spelt with an 8 because there was supposed to be 8 projects, but it really was about, you know, collaborating. Like, I basically chose the director, who's ended up being Martin Smith, who's a Leith based director, who's done a lot of music videos and a couple of quite successful shorts, one called Tracks, which I think did quite well, and so kind of chose him, and then I was in all the casting sessions and was like really heavily involved, and sort of, you know, it felt a little bit like sort of, I don't want to say an apprenticeship, but it, you know, it felt like sort of following. I basically was sort of getting to see every stage of it without kind of having the kind of
responsibility
of having to make a decision. And I think one of the things that helped with me kind of later on when I was directing the Scottish short was, when you have that distance but you're still kind of involved, you know, in the casting, I wasn't at all like, oh, could I sort of deal with this kid? It was just, he's the best one, he's the one I like the most, you know? And I think that's actually something you have to do when you're directing, is sort of disregard everything that, you know, all those little things, all those little sort of, oh, he seems, you know, he seems like a bit of a handful, this one, or oh, I'm not, you know, you just have to, you go with your gut more when you're, again, when you don't have responsibilities.
Of course.
And, you know, I think I basically did not worry as much when it came to do this Scottish short, that really came out of the documentary, The Port.
Yeah.
It's cast from non-actors, the sort of two lead girls are both regular, well, one of them's a barmaid in The Port and the other's a regular. And it's really sort of, you know, big chunks of it are taken from like their life experiences. And, you know, I did write a script and did a lot of development with the script, but on set, I don't think I looked at it once. It was really just, we improvised a lot. We kind of, I mean, there's a whole scene which Tom edited the film, which I think we've struggled with a bit, because there is a whole scene that's just sort of on the day I brought a drum and sort of made up some stuff. And, you know, there's like Gary McCormick's in it, who's, you might know from films such as The Acid House. He's like the creepy neighbour, and he's in Valhalla Rising, and there's another one that he's in. He's in a load of stuff, but he's basically, oh, Sweet 16, of course, he's the dad in Sweet 16. But he's, you know, he's still basically a non-actor, he's not trained. So even when we were bringing in sort of experienced people, it was still sort of, he's, you know, drank in The Port, so it was just sort of keeping it as realistic as possible and as sort of, you know, interesting.
So this is just in, for anybody who maybe never saw The Jump, this is the Scottish short.
Cool.
So this is the Scottish short, which is, it's called The Port as well, or is
no,
it?
No, it's called Wild.
Okay.
It's called Wild, and I'm not going to spell it, because
it's contentious.
It's contentious. But anyway, so yeah, so Wild, but on that was, you know, I think a couple of months before I shot, kind of Tom reminded me that I hadn't actually done any fiction for quite a long time. And I remember when he brought it up, I kind of went, oh, and I started worrying. And then I was still editing The Port at the time, and I was watching that and just thinking, well, you know, I've got some really good stuff in this documentary, and some of it is, you know, a bit directed, because you have to do that. And I just kind of thought, like, oh, why am I worrying about this? Because I'm just going to be working with the same people, and, you know, I know that a lot of the things happening in the film are things that they've experienced, so I should just sort of treat it like a documentary, and that's what I did, and I think it sort of really paid off, you know. And I would do it again, you know, even working with actors and stuff. I think you just sort of need to leave yourself open to changes, and, you know, not, you know, stick too rigidly to a script. But I mean, at the same time, it was all about sort of capturing the feeling of the script, you know.
So what's the you've just finished editing it. What's the plan with the film?
Well, I hope this is right. I think it's playing out of competition at Encounters, and possibly in competition, if it is accepted. We had seen a rough cut in, but apart from that, I'm not sure where it's going yet. We need to have a meeting about festivals.
Of course.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's going to get pushed quite hard, I think. They've got some money left over this year for festival applications, so hopefully that'll go alright. Yeah.
Awesome. So that's one of the latest projects of you guys working on, and you've obviously got the Porch coming at the film festival. Are you guys working on anything else at the moment? That you can talk about?
Not really. there's another film that we work together on that's playing next Sunday the 30th, which is called Rush Cut, which is kind of a kind of observational documentary about this folk festival in Yorkshire where people make a tower of rushes and carry it through the town over a weekend. And it's kind of pooled. It's kind of about a 4 meter high kind of tower of rushes, and it weighs about a ton and a half, and it's pulled by 80 Morris men at the front and 60 at the back, and they carry it kind of carry it through these between these villages in the kind of Yorkshire Dales over the course of a weekend, stopping off at kind of pubs and dancing, and then they end up at the church where they lay the rushes on the ground and have a service.
Wow.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert. So we did kind of a documentary, we kind of just filmed this.
Yes.
And that's playing on 30th. But that kind of is an experiment to do a series of films like this that would be called the name of the kind of whole thing is The Great British Folk Map. And that's supposed to be kind of like, well, the idea is to sort of find similar events like this and kind of film them in a kind of poetic documentary style, and make kind of a series of like kind of 5-10 minute short films.
And that makes sense to me, knowing your previous work, that obviously ties into all of that, which sounds great. We didn't really delve into this, but where does that influence come, the whole folk side of things?
I think I'm not 100% sure. I mean, there was kind of when I was younger, I think there was just, you know, I kind of some children's books and things like that, or just stories. I kind of lent towards ones that had a kind of folk element to them. And in particular, there's this writer, Alan Garner, who I kind of had on tape. He did the Weird Stone of Bisingamen and Moon of Gomrath, which I think Weird Stone of Bisingamen's like 1960s or early, I can't remember when it came out now. But they're like sort of, you know, short children's fantasy stories.
Yeah.
But they, a lot of their kind of material is drawn from folk stories or local folk culture. He comes from Alderley Edge, which is kind of near Manchester.
Yeah.
And like The Weird Son of a Singman is reimagining the kind of the local folklore of Alderley Edge, which has a lot of ancient mines in it.
Yeah.
In the end of my graduation, I started getting into children's books again for some reason. I started reading a lot more of Sendak and some of his books. And there's one called Dear Millie, which is a Grimm Brothers story.
Yeah.
So I was just reading that, and then I was going back to Alan Garner because I'd remembered liking him. And then suddenly going back to him, I saw the kind of the context of the folklore context. And some of his books, like Moon of Gomrath, is a children's book, but it has a bibliography at the back with all these folk references.
Oh, brilliant.
So it was kind of then going back and rereading that, I suddenly was like, oh, hang on, like here's like, this is what I was looking for, because it's just a book. A lot of that's kind of like Welsh myth or the Carmina Gadelica, which is like a Scottish book of kind of spells and prayers that was collected in, oh, I don't know when, 1800s or something, or Victorian. So then I just started going back to that, and then I don't know, and then I think I like landscape a lot and kind of westerns. So it was suddenly like, and then I think just, you know, kind of the Highlands.
Cool.
And so then it was kind of just seeing all of these things kind of.
Yeah, yeah. And you can see that influence in your work from now on, or yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I kind of think it's something that I'm kind of working through. Because I'm trying to start writing again, which I haven't really done since Stefan and Up, which is kind of like, I don't know, like a year and a half ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm trying to sort of start writing again and kind of, and I think it's kind of maybe trying to find that kind of, at least continue that idea of kind of landscape having its own history.
Yep.
And its own kind of language to it, which I think something that's what interests me. I guess it's how the stories connect to the landscape.
And that
a landscape kind of has a memory.
Cool. And Rory, are you able to talk of any projects or anything going forward?
Well, I mean, I've not got anything that's like funded or anything like that. I'm sort of working on, I want to do another short sort of in Leith based on sort of people I really know. I think I'm kind of, what I'm thinking is I'm going to do some sort of blurry documentary fiction things that sort of mix it up a bit. I'm kind of tempted to do something that's just like a, almost like a set kind of, you know, 3 months on a blog or a Tumblr or something like that, and sort of post something every week. Or I don't know, I want to do something that's a bit more, that is kind of the development, because I'm kind of interested in trying to develop things sort of with people and a camera rather than on the page, you know.
Of course, yeah.
But we'll see if I actually do it, I don't know.
Sounds great.
That might just be a load of baloney.
Yeah, who knows? But we'll see. Guys, thank you so much for doing this podcast.
Yeah.
And yes, we'll be back with more podcasts during the film festival. Thanks very much for listening.